The opinions of Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman don't reflect the views of Gal Media. Parental discretion is advised. KFNC Mont Belvieu, Houston, a Gal Media station.
Sports.
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 So they just sit there and talk about sports?
Yeah, and apparently we've been doing it for an awful long time. Let's have some fun today. It's a very special version of the Blitz on a Friday Friday.
Shall we begin?
It's Friday, Friday, gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend, weekend. Friday, Friday, getting down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Partying, partying, yeah. Partying, partying, yeah. Fun, 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 fun. Looking forward to the weekend.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And The Blitz is on for a Friday Friday. Welcome to the greatest show in the history of the known universe with me, Fred Fowler, the Falcon, A.J. Hoffman, Chocolate Braveheart, Aaron Raybould, the Voldemort. If you want to get in today, 713-780. ESPN is your number, 713-780-3776. Or you can get us on the Blitz Facebook page. Find the Blitz, click like, send us a message. Aaron will be happy to read it. There's also Twitter, at Fred Fowler, F-A-O-U-R. At AJ is the real, at Aaron is blitzed, at Degenerates975. You can text the show, you know the number for that. And it's a Friday Friday. It's a very special Friday Friday because somehow, Mr. Hoffman, you and I have managed to do this show for 10 years now.
10 years. I don't know if everybody realizes how rare that is in this business. I mean, a lot of radio careers don't last 10 years, but certainly radio partnerships generally don't. And I'll be honest. Had you asked me when I met you if we'd do 10 years, I would have said, it's pretty unlikely. So kudos to both of us, Fred, but mostly to Tepper, who saw something in us and really gave us a chance. And, there's something about people who are very different and often in radio that makes for very interesting content. And I think you and I are a couple pretty different dudes. And we have some similarities, certainly. But personally, especially when we met, there was very little that we had in common, and it made for some funny moments on the radio. And that's you know me. That, when I met you, I said, dude, I'm here to try to make people laugh. And we've been doing it for 10 years. It's pretty amazing.
Well, and it's funny because I was still basically a radio newbie when we started doing the show together. I'd been doing it for less than 2 years. And with Matt, and so Matt's the only person I'd ever worked with until we did the tryouts before you got the job. And it was funny because I didn't realize that you didn't have shows last that long. I mean, I just didn't know.
Right.
So I always just kind of assumed it would go.
You thought everybody was John and Lance.
Yeah, I kind of did because that's who I kind of looked up to. And I told the story before, but we went through this period where we did tryouts, and you came in and did yours, and it didn't go as well as I had hoped it would go, or that you had hoped it would go. But then when Dave sat down and said, "Hey, what do you think?" and I go, "Man, I really like AJ. I think we could make that show work." And he's like, "Good. I'm glad you think that, because that's my thinking too." And I go, and like the first show we had was pretty awful. And then I remember us going to Nick's place and sitting down and having a couple beers and just saying, "Hey, you know," because I had only done a show one way, and I was still pretty new at it. And in the end, I think we just left saying, "Well, let AJ be AJ, and I'll be me, and the show will be fine." And it's kind of been that way ever since. People still don't believe me when I tell them like the first couple shows we did together were just awful. And
yeah, I mean, listen, it's hard to find a balance, and I think like with you and Matt, Matt had been sort of the straight man in you guys' relationships, and that wasn't a role that I was coming here to play. And I mean, it was. Kudos to you for making some adjustments. I feel like I made some adjustments, and that's the way any good relationship is going to have to work. I mean, everybody's going to have to make some sacrifices and some changes to fit what the team needed, and we got here. We've had some great successes. Yeah, I mean, what was it? 2017 where we went like a full year as number one in the city, and we were a month away from a full calendar year, which was what I wanted. I wanted to go from January to December, and then some other stupid show won December and pissed me off. But I know we had 12 straight books where we were number one in this city. So I was we've got a lot to be proud of, Freddie.
Yeah, we do, and it's and the cool thing is, I mean, it's still fun. I mean, I still enjoy this show more than anything, and to me, it doesn't feel like 10 years. And the other weird thing for me is I spent 20 years at the Houston Chronicle, which is still, you know, the longest marriage I've ever had. And I don't think of myself as having anything to do with that anymore. It just feels like that this has been, this has kind of become my life, and I'm really happy with it. And I think we've done some great things. And guess what? We're not done doing great things. I think we've got a lot of, a lot left in us here. As long as I don't die, I was really worried I might die last night and not make it to 10 years. But here I am, alive.
Boy, that would have been embarrassing.
Yeah, don't think I didn't think about that. I know it's stupid, but I'm like, man, what happens if I just keel over tonight? And then we didn't make it. Then that's on me.
That would have been all on you. What a dummy.
But it was it was fun that, like, well, the Blitz is actually a little older than 10 years because that's what we had called the show with Matt when we moved to Daily. But I mean, this iteration of it, 10 years, and there's not a lot of you mentioned John and Lance. There's just not a lot of other people, and they had to break up for a while.
Yeah,
for a few years, just because after a while, I guess you just get sick of working with people. Fortunately, I guess because I'm old, I always have a short memory. So if on the off chance I'm pissed off about something, by the next day, it's over. So
well, and I think a lot of credit is due to me. Because you've always been real demanding about needing to make the most money. And several times it was my turn to get paid, and Fred would come in the office and say, listen, if AJ gets more money than me, I'm out of here. And so I would take less money. And I think that not a lot of guys were willing to do that. And, I am a generous man. I think that the team is what's most important. And I made many sacrifices to get us here.
Well, I solved all that because I had to put in my contract that I had to make one more dollar than you. So if you got a raise, I got a raise. But no, in
I joke about that, by the way. That's not a real story.
Yeah, I don't. Money's never really been a motivating factor for me, but doing the show has been, and we've got some. Well, we've got some old friends that are going to join us today that I can't wait to have on the show. I'm not going to tell you who, although Tepper already tweeted out he's going to be on. So you're going to have to just stick around for all 3 hours. Plus, I'm excited about this interview with Jonathan Snowden that you've had set up about the Ken Shamrock book. I can't wait to read that now. I'm going to have to borrow your copy or something or download it off of Apple Books now that it's available.
You're going to love this book. It is a great book.
And so he'll join us at 4:30, but after that, we're going to have some voices you haven't heard in a while. So
I sent a text to our boss, to David Gao, to try to get him on the show, and he did not respond. So I think clearly he's not interested.
Well, we definitely need to have David on at some point, if not today, because there's he's a busy man right now.
Oh, whatever.
as you well know. But yeah, it'd be great to have him on too. And I can't say enough about, things really took off for us when we came over to Gal Media. I don't want to. I mean, we had some good times at Cumulus, but it was a nightmare place to work. And when we got here, I mean, we got moved 4-7. We got all the opportunities that we've got. He's asked both of us to be a bigger part of the company in other areas, and it's just been it's been a fantastic place to work, and that's been the best part. It's not just that, you know, we've had a lot of success with the show. It's that this company believes in us and lets us do our thing. And I think, you know, at the risk of sounding a little arrogant, I think we've not taken advantage of that in a negative way. I think we've helped make this a better company, not just on the station, but throughout Gal Media.
Well, I won't argue with you there. I've been very generous to this company, I must say.
Oh, man. 713-780-3776. So, and obviously, Brother Bears, I think Jerome Solomon and Jorge could have had a great run, too. Then again, they would have killed each other at some point. Yeah, that was when the station first started. It was Jorge and Jerome. And it was interesting because John Madani was the program director, and I had no idea when he hired me that he was leaving like a week later. And the
to come work with me.
Yeah. And so I'd started at 1560. It was 2007 after I left the Chronicle, and I was working for free, basically. And they offered to pay me to come over to ESPN 97.5, and I thought I was going to be doing the show with Jerome. And then they brought Carl Dukes over at the same time, and that kind of changed everything. And so I was like, okay, I'm doing a weekend show. And Madani came up to me and said, do you want to do it by yourself, or do you want to work with somebody? We've got this intern kid named Matt Dean. And I'm like, Matt Dean, the poker player? I'm in. And so that's kind of how it started. And our first big guest was the late Bob McNair, who agreed to come on the show on a Saturday morning at 8 a.m. when we were doing the front page.
What a gentleman.
At the time. Yeah, yeah. Well, that was before the cancer started getting in his head and stuff like that. But, you know, it was a lot of fun getting it started, and just seeing where it is now, I mean, from those days is incredible. And, you know, like I said, I think there's a lot more yet to do, my friend. And, you know, we're going to celebrate a little bit today. I am cracking open my very last Carbot Kentucky Habit to celebrate this. So, been saving it for a special.
I'll have to go grab a beer a little later on in the show, but I need to do that as well.
Yeah, well, I'm milking this one, I can guarantee you, because it's still bomber size, and if I drink that thing by the end of the show, I'll be upside down. All right, before we go to break, I posted some Arkansas Derby picks for tomorrow on Sports Map. So if you guys are going to be playing, I've got picks for four races, and if you're playing today. There's a race coming up in 6 minutes where I like the 9 horse at 10-1.
And, hey, man, that ain't no regular Derby. That's the Arkansas Derby.
Brought to you by?
Brought by Coleman Milk. Hey, they give these horses down here in Texas this regular old Texas milk. Man, at the Arkansas Derby, those horses, they're eating Coleman ice cream. They're eating Coleman butter. They're eating Coleman yogurt. Every dairy product you can imagine, loaded to the gills with Arkansas steroids, man. Let me tell you.
All right, man. We are going to take a very quick break. Don't go anywhere. It's the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
This is the Blitz on ESPN 97.5. You are listening to The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. 713-780-ESPN is your number. 713-780-3776 as we do a 10-year anniversary show. And we've been talking about the restaurants maybe being able to keep the beer and wine to go forever. Eric Sandler had a story on Culture Map today quoting the governor saying that he's tweeted out his support for allowing that to go on forever. So if that happens and he has something to do with it, I'll take back some of the things I've said about him. Not everything, I'll take back a couple things I've said about him. But I think, I mean, it just makes sense, right? But it's at least it's coming from somebody who has something to do with it.
That's true.
And I'll also give Eric and Culture Map a shout out. They've got a list of all the restaurants that are reopening today, all by neighborhood. So if you're curious, if you feel the need to go and sit with other people, then there's a whole list there. I
drove by a place today that's open. I won't name the name of it, but it's got like an outdoor seating area. It's like an Irish pub type place. And there's a bunch of people just sitting out on the patio. And it just made me uncomfortable.
Maybe yeah,
I'm being a baby, but it's just weird. I ain't ready for it.
Well, and I think a lot of people feel that way. And the cool thing is, if you are comfortable and want to go do it,
cool.
By all means, go do it. And if you're not, you want to wait a little bit, there's nothing wrong with that. You can still support these places by getting takeout, which is what we've been doing all along. So, I think it's to me, it's up to everybody. But if you do go out, at least wear a mask, man. It's a small thing, and it does make a difference. I mean, I've seen a lot of research on what your odds of getting it are if you've got a mask versus not. So, I mean, I don't know how accurate it is because I don't know how you can really test that stuff. So it's speculation. But, just be smart about it if you're going to go out. And, we've got fantastic weather. So if you're going to go sit on a patio, just, practice your social distancing. I still have stuff that makes me uncomfortable. Like this morning I went and, grabbed a bunch of Gatorade Zero from my gas station that I go to, and I had my mask on, and then there's two people in there that didn't, and one guy kept creeping in line closer than 6 feet, and I just turned around and said, dude, 6 feet.
Yeah.
I'm not about that life. It may not bother you, but there's a reason they have it marked off. So it's like, get your ass behind the line, chief. And I don't think he was happy about that, but I really don't give a bleep. So, it's about what makes me comfortable. I'm happy That's going right. out in public. Just keep your damn distance. So, 713-780-ESPN is your number, 713-780-3776. And maybe if people haven't been listening all week, why don't you, so that we don't have to set it up when we get him on, tell people a little bit about this book and why you wanted to have him on.
Yeah, so Jonathan Snowden is he's written for just about every online MMA website that you can think of, notably Bleacher Report. And he's also heavy into pro wrestling, which is funny to me. But a lot of MMA media guys are crossover guys from pro wrestling, and he is one of them. And he likes wrestling more than he likes MMA, but he wrote a book about Ken Shamrock. And for those of you who don't know Ken is he fought in UFC 1. He is legitimately a pioneer of MMA, and fought for a long time. And the story of how this kid came up, I mean, he was basically just had a miserable, miserable childhood. Ran away from home permanently when he was 10 years old to live in the back of a car. I mean, it's just there's some really insane stories. And the dude goes on to become, if not the best fighter in the world, one of the best fighters in the world. And at the time, like obviously now there's guys like Conor McGregor who and Ronda Rousey and Brock Lesnar who drew just massive amounts of eyeballs to MMA. But the biggest draw probably up until Brock Lesnar, and that includes George St. Pierre and Anderson Silva, who were, probably more accomplished fighters, but the biggest draw to MMA ever at that point was Ken Shamrock. You put Ken Shamrock's name on a card and it was going to sell. And, I mean, it's just, it's pretty unbelievable the career that guy put together, between, not just fighting, but he did a stint in pro wrestling, did multiple stints in pro wrestling, and honestly, that's kind of how it started. He started in Japan in an organization that basically decided, what would it be like if we did this for real? And it became known as Pancrase, which was like sort of one of the early iterations of MMA before the UFC. And, I mean, there's some shenanigans that were going on. It seems like there was some match fixing and things like that going on. But it's just a fascinating tale. And, I mean, obviously the drugs and the partying and anything you get with like a big star times 100, though. And once you read the story, it's like, oh, my God, I can't believe this dude is, A, still alive. But it's a really incredible story, and it's emotional, and it's almost a history of professional fighting. I mean, it goes down through his whole career, and, I mean, it goes back to the early 90s. So it's a really, really fun read, and I recommend it highly. And I thought it'd be a good idea to have him on just because it's such an interesting book.
Yeah, that'll be next segment. So stick around. I'm excited to hear that interview as well. And yeah, I'm gonna download it as soon as it's available and maybe read it this weekend. Since I'm still not going to venture out too much, but we shall see. Now, if you saw this, just to get a little sports in, the NFL is leaving open the possibility of playing games on Saturday if there's no college football in the fall.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it always makes sense, like in December when they do those games. But I still think there's going to be some kind of college football unless there's just another ridiculous outbreak, because we keep seeing that campuses are going to reopen in September. I know A&M's supposed to reopen. If the campuses are open, you're probably going to have football.
Yep.
So it may not be right on time, and it may be a shortened season or something like that. But if not, and, you know, none of us know what's going to happen. But if you have another outbreak and you're not opening the campuses, and you damn sure can't have college football, and you have to have almost everybody agreeing to do it because of scheduling and everything else. So, I mean, if half the teams want to come back and half don't, guess what? The don'ts are going to win that because you can't make enough games. But, I mean, I think it's... I'm glad they're leaving that possibility open. I'll still be surprised if we have fans in the seats before 2021, but, you know, who knows? Maybe during the summer this thing goes away. I mean, I don't know, but I just hope as we roll stuff back out, we keep it under control and it doesn't get worse. And just as long as people are smart, hopefully it won't. 713-780-ESPN. Man, my nine horse ran fourth. Last time I checked, they don't pay you anything for that.
Oh, womp, womp.
Ah, well, 10-1 worth a shot. But I do have a bunch of plays for tomorrow on SportsMap. So go and check that out, sportsmap.com. And SportsMap run by Josh Dorden now, which I'm very excited about. We'll have that. And then... you know, Dave Tepper's going to join us for sure. He's already tweeted it out, so that's not a spoiler. But we've got a couple other guests that you haven't heard in a while that I'm really excited to get back on ESPN 97.5. So you just have to stick with us the whole show today. How about that? I don't think it's too much to ask. All right, should we go to break here?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. All right, we will be right back. It's The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. They're on my side, as far as I can see.
Yeah. ESPN 97.5. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we're back on The Blitz, and very excited about our guest here. I've not had a chance to read the book yet. I'm going to download it as soon as possible, but A.J. has. So, A.J., I will let you take it away here, my man.
Yeah, I'll bring him on now. And I mean, I mentioned this in the last segment. This guy has written for basically every major MMA site that you can. He works at Bleacher Report now, senior writer there. He writes MMA. He's also a big wrestling guy. Jonathan Snowden joins us on the program. John, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, man. I finished your book this week, and it was – I mean, I'm into any books about MMA, but this one in particular, it was – really well done. So before we even get started, I just want to give you kudos. I mean, how long were you working on the book, and how pleased are you with the final product?
I was working on it way too long, and then I am actually though really happy with how it turned out. But so we started, I think, back at, I did my first interviews for it in 2017, so it's been quite a little journey.
And there, I mean, this isn't the first book about Ken Shamrock that's come out. I mean, that's got to be it's a seems like a bold move to write a book about someone when there's already been one done and the guy's still alive. Like, how much more could have really happened? What brought you to the point of realizing that the whole story hasn't been told yet?
Well, it actually happened there in Houston. I was at a Bellator event. I had done a story on Ken. He was fighting Kimbo Slice, and I had gone out to his training camp. He had his training camp in a mobile home in San Diego. So it was kind of a weird story. So I went out there and I met Ken, and we hit it off pretty well. So then I met him again in Houston, him and his whole team. And we're sitting around, this is before he fought Royce Gracie, and they're telling me all these stories. And I'm like you, I've consumed all of the Ken Shamrock content. I've even written about him in two of my other books. And they're telling me all these stories, and I'm thinking like, man, you know, there's a lot that people don't know about Ken Shamrock. And I'm like, man, you need to do another book. And he's like, I've done two books. So I was like, yeah, but Ken, none of the real stories are in any of your other books. So that's kind of the genesis of it. And for some reason, he agreed to talk with me, and it just spiraled from there.
Is Ken an easy guy to work with? I mean, I'm sure anybody who's involved with him in MMA and wrestling would say no. But for you, working this book, was Ken an easy subject to work with?
Well, I did mention that it took 3 years to do the book, so you can draw some of your own conclusions from that. The thing about Ken is, like, when he's engaged in something, he's very easy to work with. So I'll give him credit for that. The problem is that, you know, a lot of the time he's not engaged. When he's not engaged in, like, this book project, then he's not doing anything at all for it, right? So, and the other thing that was kind of difficult for me was that he didn't want to do anything on the phone. So I actually had to fly to Reno, where he lives, a couple of times to do interviews with him, because he just wouldn't talk on the phone. So there were some struggles along the way. But, you know, overall, I mean, he was very open, as you read, about his life, the bad parts as well as the good parts. So I'm pretty pleased.
Do you think that writing this book now and getting Ken at a time when, I mean, he's a born-again Christian, it seems like, I mean, I don't know the full ins and outs of what this marriage, how it's working out, but it seems like it's the healthiest relationship he's ever been in. Do you think catching him now got him to be a little more honest about the old days of Ken, whereas if he were still living that way, maybe he wouldn't be as open about what was going on with him?
I think that's very smart on your part to pick that up. I think that's definitely true. And also, because of the time when we were doing these interviews, he wasn't doing, you know, he had finished up his fighting career. He wasn't really doing any wrestling at the time. And so I think there was probably, he felt like he had less to protect, right? Like less of the Ken Shamrock brand, quote unquote, that he was worried about protecting. Now, of course, now he's gone back into wrestling. And, you know, if we had thought about doing this project in 2020, it might not have happened. So I think you're right. I hit him at just the right point in his life where he was happy to talk about the old days, and he wasn't so worried about the consequences of telling the truth about stuff. And so, you know, it worked out really well, at least for me.
Am I wrong that, and I was saying this during the last segment when we were kind of talking up the book, and now obviously there's been guys like Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey and Brock Lesnar was really the guy, I think, who sort of exploded MMA to a different level. But maybe before Brock Lesnar, was Ken Shamrock MMA's biggest draw, like his the biggest star in MMA? Obviously, St. Pierre and Anderson Silva, Fedor, these were better fighters. But was he the biggest ticket you could get before Brock Lesnar came into the game?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for sure, Cain was a tremendous star. Even before he went into wrestling or into WWE wrestling, he was huge. He and Hoyce Gracie at UFC 5 and he and Dan Severn drew what would still be respectable pay-per-view buy rates for today's UFC. Like that's how attractive they were as box office draws. And so Cain, even before WWF, was a big star. Then he went to WWF. And you have to remember, it's not like wrestling now. While wrestling is still popular, it hasn't, you know, only wrestling fans know about what's going on in wrestling. When Cain was in WWF, this was at the height of Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock. I mean, he's wrestling those guys on the main event of WWE Raw. And so through that, you know, Cain got even more popular. So by the time he came back the second time to UFC to fight Tito Ortiz and guys like that, he was a monster star. They brought him in specifically kind of to save the UFC when the Fertitta brothers had first bought it in the early 2000s. They were having a hard time selling pay-per-views, and Cain came in and kind of taught them a little bit about how to promote a fight. And his fight with Tito was really the first one that showed Lorenzo Fertitta, who owned the UFC, like, okay, this might actually work. He was kind of the proof of concept for how UFC could go about promoting a pay-per-view.
When and Jonathan Stone, who just released the book Shamrock, The World's Most Dangerous Man, available now on Amazon, joining us on the program, talking about the book. When you talk to Cain about the early days of his life, and a lot of this is the stuff that I didn't really know about Cain. And it's easy. I mean, there's some stuff that the partying and stuff later on that you don't know, but you just assume. But the stuff about his childhood is, I mean, as a reader, is difficult to digest sometimes. It's very serious subject matter, and I mean, from sexual abuse to, you know, basically just running away and being homeless to physical abuse. I mean, this dude had about as rough of a childhood as you could imagine. Was it difficult even talking to him about that? Is it uncomfortable in those moments, especially you're sitting there face to face with him, to talk to him about such painful and heavy stuff?
Oh, yeah. It was definitely, it was the hardest in-person interview I've ever conducted. And I've done a lot of them as a journalist over the years, but it was difficult, especially because of, you know, he's Cain Shamrock, right? He's this kind of big, burly, gruff, tough guy. You know, you can just look at his face and see, like, this guy has been through some stuff. He's not a guy you want to mess with. And for him to be as vulnerable as he was, you know, he and I went to a coffee shop and we sat there for probably 4 hours, just for that portion of it. And it was the, it was hard. You just to hear his story kind of moves you because it's so traumatic. And it was interesting because, he's pretty freewheeling most of the time. But for this, he told me, he said, I don't want you to ask me any questions. And I'm just going to sit and I'm going to tell you my story. And that's what we did, you know, just for hours, like him telling me about his early life. And with no interruptions from me, it was kind of like a monologue, and it was the only way he was comfortable doing it. You know, I think if there was some engagement between him and I, he would have started thinking about, you know, what he was telling me. You know, like, who's this guy? And I'm telling him these intimate details of my life. And so it was an intense experience for sure.
And it's funny because almost all of Cain's life, I mean, aside from that early part where it was pretty much all darkness, there were highs along with the lows. So, I mean, while he was at his peak as a fighter, I mean, his personal life was just a disaster. He's drug riddled. I mean, he's just a mess. And then late in life, when, you know, he realizes that his finances are forcing him to fight, and honestly, Cain still thought he could fight, despite the fact that he clearly could no longer compete at the level he wanted to. He was still going out there because he had to fight for money. But as sad as that is, and we see it with a lot of these guys, Chuck Liddell and guys like that, it's every time they get out there, it's like, oh, no, he's doing this again. But at the same time, his actual life outside of the cage seems to have you know, settled down, and he seems happy in a way. It's weird that Ken almost always has like some really happy things going on and some really terribly sad things going on in his life.
Yeah, he's definitely, it's been an interesting life. There's no doubt about that. But I think that he definitely feels that, you know, like when he's in the place now where, like, potentially he could have made a, if he had this mentality that he has right now, if he had had that when he was a younger man, like, you know, he would have been unstoppable. And you know, it's only, like, for athletes, I think this happens a lot. Like, just when they start figuring things out, it's when the physical part of it falls apart for them. And that's really what happened to Ken. He got his life together, like his real life, his personal life, stopped using drugs. He found happiness. And unfortunately, that was also when, you know, both of his knees were blown out. And he had to have back surgery and neck surgery, and he's fighting through all of this, heart problems. And it was just really unfortunate for him that just as things came together in one area of his life, it fell apart really dramatically in the other.
And, I mean, how much can this relate to sort of like what John Jones has going these days? I mean, we talk about, imagine what John Jones could be if he was taking training seriously. But, I mean, Ken Shamrock was at his peak. We're not talking about like having a few beers. I mean, this guy was living like a madman and then showing up at the gym and just wrecking everybody. I mean, and people are like, well, John Jones could be better if he was not drinking or what. I mean, Ken Shamrock was at his prime when he was just partying like a madman.
Yeah, it actually did remind me a lot of John Jones. You know, I've been to Albuquerque and Greg Jackson's gym to tell a bunch of stories there. And so I've met John and a lot of people that train with John. And it did kind of, you know, it's kind of like a more extreme, I think, version of John Jones, because I definitely think that Ken took things a little bit farther than John has. But, you know, there's something about that, I think, that these young, great athletes, that they feel bulletproof, they feel invincible. You know, Ken Shamrock and John Jones are the same way. They're thinking, like, well, why can't I do this? Like, why, if you're John Jones and you're thinking, like, okay, I went out and partied and I did all this cocaine and I got busted and I still beat Daniel Cormier, who's the second best fighter in the world, easily. Like, you know, what's his motivation to stop living that way? And I think that Ken had some of that, too, where it's just like it came so easy for him. You know, why would he ever not, you know, party all the time? You know, he doesn't have to stop. Nothing made him stop. And then by the time he realized that it was catching up with him, it's too late, right? So that's like kind of the hazard of being a young man, I think, unfortunately, is that, like, you know, by the time you know any better, it's too late.
Have you gotten any feedback from Ken about the book? Is he happy with the way he came across in the book?
I'm interested to find out. He and I are actually supposed to talk on the phone tonight. So I don't know. I've not received any positive feedback, so I'm a little bit worried. But at the same time, you've read the book, so it shouldn't be any secret to him what was going to be in the book. We talked about it. There's no area that, you know, he didn't get his say in. If I found out something from someone else, I asked him about it. That was kind of our deal. He told me, I'm not going to tell on myself about a lot of things, but if you find something out, I'll tell you. I'll tell you the truth about it. And that was kind of our arrangement. And so I kept coming to him with crazier and crazier stories, and he would say, yep, that's true. I did that. And then we talk about it. So I hope that he's not surprised by what's in the book. It's the stuff we talked about.
Well, I'll be curious what how that conversation tonight goes. Maybe you can shoot me a message and let me know how it goes, because that's kind of how I want that in my mind. That's the bow on the story, is how Ken accepts it. But
it could get interesting. This will be one I'm glad that we're not doing in person.
So, is the book available only in digital form, or are there hard copies available yet, or is there a date when that's going to happen? What, tell us the deal on the book itself.
Yeah, so it's definitely available in digital format on both Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. And you can order a paperback version of the book. It's a slightly delayed process of them getting it to you. Unfortunately, this is all related to the coronavirus, and you know, most of the places that are printing books are not places that are open in a lot of the country. So it's been quite a, we could do a whole nother interview on the struggles I've had getting someone to try to print this book during this time. long story short, you can definitely get it in the digital form, and you can order a paperback, and it'll take a couple days extra to get to you. But I think that they're saying like 5 days shipping now, so that, it's not too bad.
All right, that's Jonathan Snowden. Appreciate the time, man. Shamrock, The World's Most Dangerous Man is the book. Check it out on Amazon or barnesandnoble.com. Appreciate the time, man, and appreciate the great work you did with the book, John.
Hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
All right.
All right, that was good stuff, man. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that as much as I did. We're going to take a quick break. Please don't go anywhere. It's The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. You are listening to The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz, and tomorrow is it. Saturday at 2 o'clock, ESPN 97.5 Sports Map putting on the final Houston Online Poker Charity Classic. We've raised over $5,300 so far, and we're doing one more. It's $50 with an optional $10 donation, so $60. The $10 goes to Kids Meals, which delivers food to children in the Houston area, and the Southeast Texas Food Bank in Beaumont, so we get to take care of our friends in the Golden Triangle. For more information and to register, head to the editor's picks on sportsmap.com. Or just email promotion@galmedia.com. Please sign up early. I had a couple people after 2 o'clock last week send me messages saying I can't get in. Try to get in, and if you're not in by 1 o'clock, then feel free to message me, and we'll make sure you get in. But don't wait till 2 because it closes at 2:10, and then there's nothing we can do. But let's make this the biggest one yet. Should be a lot of fun. And a lot of people are asking, well, can you do more? We might do one-offs every now and then in the future, but the fact that some of the card rooms are reopening and we're partners with those guys, we don't want to take away from what they're doing. So, and plus, everybody's going to be out after today. I think a lot of people are going to get out and do things again. So we're hoping to keep you occupied, and hopefully that's worked. And I know Jerry's still got the thing going on Poker Bros, which I'm going to play the 8 o'clock tonight, and then I'm officially banned after that because the wife kind of got on me for playing poker all night for the last few nights. So, in the interest of keeping the peace, I'm like, oh, okay, it's probably fair. So one more poker tournament. I get a lot of questions about how long do you guys think you'll keep doing the show. I don't have a – there was a time where I kind of had a plan to be done in a couple of years. But if the Rona's taught me anything, it's how much fun I'm having doing this. And – you know, to me, I'm going to keep going as long as the show's fun and as long as we're doing relevant content. And if I ever get to the point where I feel like I'm a fossil and, I'm a fossil, but where I'm acting like a fossil, then I'll reevaluate. But
I think the simple way to put it is the earliest we wouldn't be doing a show together is the January 1st of 2022. So you're stuck with us for another year and a half.
Yeah, at least.
And I hope we'll figure it out beyond then.
Yeah. But I think the cool thing is we are working for a really good company that, as I mentioned at the top, has us involved in a lot of things beyond the show. And it's hard to walk away from that. And right now I have no intention to. And all along I never thought I'd do this. I'm 55 years old now. I'm old. I never thought I'd go past about 57. But at this point, if it goes another 10 years and is still good and they still want us, which, that's always the minor miracle.
That's what matters.
Then hell, I could see another 10 years, but we'll see, man. It's just, you never really know. And especially how the whole world's falling apart around us. And, we're still managing to survive that. So, but who knows what happens if the Rona keeps coming back and back and back. I mean, I have no clue. I see your boy Alex Jones is trending today.
Oh, boy. What a quote we got today from Alex Jones. I mean, we have this audio, Aaron. Yeah, my guy Alex Jones is a madman. And maybe the greatest quote of Alex Jones yet came out of today. So, I mean, it's hard to find this guy now. He's banned from Twitter. Even his wife is on Twitter like, hey, my ex-husband's on Twitter saying crazy things right now. This guy's a moron. Please keep him away from my children. I mean, he is out of control. And it's funny that there are people who believe this guy is like a real, like, with it guy. Like, this is a guy to listen to. This is a guy who you're getting real information from. Listen to this clip and tell me this guy's just not completely disconnected from reality.
I'll admit it. I will eat my neighbors. I'm not letting my kids die. I'm just going to be honest. My superpower is being honest. I've extrapolated this out, and I won't have to for a few years since I got food and stuff, but I'm literally looking at my neighbors now and going, I'm ready to hang them up and gut them and skin them and chop them up. And you know what? I'm ready. My daughters aren't starving to death. I'll eat my neighbors. See, my superpower is being honest. I'll eat your ass. I will. I'm combat model, optimum self-sufficiency, probably the leader. The point is have you thought about that yet? Because I'm somebody that thought I could fix this, and I'm starting to think about having to eat my neighbors. You think I like sizing up my neighbor, how I'm going to haul him up by a chain and chop his ass up? I'll do it. My children aren't going hungry. I will eat your ass. That's why I want the globalists to know. I will eat your ass first.
No. Fred, globalist? Are you a globalist?
I don't know what that is, to be honest.
If you're
with
a globalist, then you're first in line. Globalist to the front. We normally let ladies to the front of the line on the call-in line. In Alex Jones' ass-eating line, it's globalist to the front. They get first crack at it.
My superpower is being honest. I'll eat your ass.
That's the quote of the year.
Yeah, I don't know if it's... I mean, it's up there with the frogs are gay. It really is. It's probably better than that. But, yeah, I don't know what a globalist is. Somebody's going to have to educate me on that. I guess I missed the edition of the show.
Globalists are like Hillary Clinton, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. I'm not Hillary Clinton, so I guess I'll be all right. Well, I'll let my neighbors know I'm not going to eat your ass.
Yeah, my neighbors are safe.
If in a Armageddon situation, there's plenty of stray dogs running around the neighborhood that I would eat before I would ever consider a human being. So you have nothing to worry about. Or the rest of you, not just your ass. Okay, let's take a quick break. Hour number one already in the books. Don't go anywhere. It's The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
Will eat your ass.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.